This is Elizabeth Pan, and welcome to the Shut Up Boobs edition of The Cultural Dish, the podcast where we invite two of our friends over for dinner and make them talk to us about three cultural topics. In this edition, we discuss the Lego movie, the proposed breaking up of California, and the BuzzFeed trend on the internet. Hello everyone, and welcome to the Cultural Dish Podcast. I'm your host, Juliana Moreno-Patel, and I'm joined by my fabulous co-host, as always, Liz Pan. Hi,
hello.
Liz.
Hi.
Mid-bite. And our two guests today, the first is actor Newton Kaneshiro. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks.
And then we have multi-hyphenate actor, writer, director, producer, Claire Garrity-Mott. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you.
All right, so let's dive right in. Our first topic, Liz, would you like to tell us about it?
Absolutely. We are talking about the Lego movie, which is Phil Lord and Christopher Miller's movie, animation by the Australian studio, digital studio Animal Logic. That's the same studio that also did Great Gatsby and The Hunger Games, starring Chris Pratt, Morgan Freeman, Elizabeth Banks, and Will Ferrell. So we all went out and saw this movie, this traditional kids movie. And I wanted to ask you, Newton, was it what you would have expected?
I really enjoyed it. It wasn't what I expected. I expected it to be a complete, basically an action-adventure film, but using Lego, the Lego figures. I didn't expect it to be written as if it's from the point of view from a child. Right from the get-go, it felt like it was written from the point of view of a child. The songs were simple. The rhymes were simple. The jokes were jokes that a child could have made, and I was really pleasantly surprised with that. So I enjoyed it, and then I was also surprised by the ending. I'm not going to spoil it, but towards the ending, I enjoyed where that went with it.
Claire, what did you think?
I thought it was great. It's an interesting story because a few of my friends, like grown-up friends, told me that I had to go see the Lego movie. They said, you have to go see the Lego movie, which I was like, what do you mean I have to? I don't watch cartoons. I'm not huge into animation. I wasn't that excited about, you know, going to see any animated film. It was just a lot of fun, and I feel like it was a lot of humor that played both, you know, to kids and to our age group specifically, you know, mid-30s, early-30s. Just jokes that we would get.
I feel like there were almost more jokes for us. Like,
yes.
I am actually very curious to talk to a six-year-old who loves Legos and see what their opinion of it is, because I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was so catered to, and it's probably because the writer-directors mm-hmm. are right in our age bracket as well, and so had the same experiences growing up and kind of the same Lego toys and everything like that. But I feel like it was meant for an older audience. And I will say, I think the marketing has failed it in that. The word of mouth is fantastic and I think is working.
Mm-hmm.
But the marketing does not let you know, like, hey, even if you don't have kids, you should go see this movie because it's hilarious.
I completely agree. Yeah, I completely agree. Because the thing is, even though it seems like the main character is a child, the big lesson that is learned is from an adult.
Yeah, the lesson learned is for adults.
The lesson learned is for adults. And you're right. I think that if it were marketed in a different way, I guess they're hoping that adults, quote-unquote adults, bring their kids to come and see this, and then word of mouth spreads. But
which is happening. I will say the reason Liz and I chose to cover this on the podcast, I think, is because we were seeing on our Facebook feed and in talking to people, everyone is saying, you have to go see this movie. And now I as soon as I saw it, texted my brother, who was way more into Legos than I was, and I was like, you will love, my bachelor brother, I was like, you will love this movie.
Yeah.
I think from a movie standpoint, even just a pure movie, I loved the visuals. I loved and appreciated the magic that you go, oh yes, of course you can build that with Legos. Of course you can do this create an ocean that's made out of blue and gray Legos. And it just looked beautiful.
I love that they kept the aesthetic of the Legos. Yes. That they yes. didn't feel the need. That the fact is, their hands are these little C-shaped things that don't right. do much right. more than move up and down. I thought it was so brave of them to mm-hmm. not be like, well, it's the movie now, so let's really anthropomorphize them and make sure that they're going to, you know,
make them
appeal to kids and kids are going to be able to,
yeah,
you know.
Make the movement
right.
smoother. Yeah, I love the staccato movements of mm-hmm. all of these little Lego people. It
yeah.
worked completely.
And
like
the
different.
Way they made water come out of the shower.
Oh, yeah.
And the
oh,
way
that's
they did
brilliant.
The puffs of smoke mm-hmm. from the train. Or the mm. way the water was coming.
Yes.
It was all done with Legos. Mm-hmm.
It was
brilliant.
It was very cool.
I have to agree with the advertising, because when I started seeing the billboards around town, like the Lego movie, I totally rolled my eyes. I was like, oh my god, does Hollywood mm-hmm. not have an original idea in their head? Are they
right.
going to start making a movie of every single childhood game of ours? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. come on. And when someone said, no, actually I heard it's good, I like scoffed. mm-hmm. and then the line that drew me in was at the very top when I was watching it. Where the Morgan Freeman character is talking about, like, oh, the special is going to come. And he does this whole prophecy, and it's rhyming. And at the end, he's all, and this is true because it rhymes.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I laughed out loud. Mm-hmm. I saw it this afternoon at a 1 o'clock showing. It was me and several parents with their kids. There were maybe 8 of us in the entire theater. And I could hear all the adults laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole movie, all the adults were laughing. I actually don't know if the kids got it.
That's my question.
Yes, no, I agree with that. I think that it was, a lot of the writing was geared towards our age group.
I think it's interesting, too, because my nephew, who's 9 years old, is a big fan of Legos and the Star Wars Legos franchise and all of that. But the funny thing is, because of now, Legos are packaged to create a specific ship, a specific starship, a specific
mm-hmm.
building.
Robin Hood's
yes,
forest or something.
A specific right, yeah. something. I watch him. He gets a package for a gift, a Lego package, and he follows the instructions and does not disassemble it once it's finished.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then he plays with the toy. Mm-hmm. And so that was the interesting thing in watching this film, where the message was about actual creation and disassembling things and making things messy. And it was coming from a child. So the children who were in the audience, I'm wondering, because I grew up with Legos, but you just got a box set of like
right.
15 of this ones and 2 of these and
right.
one circular
and
one.
And you had only like 4 colors.
Yes.
And make whatever you
make
want.
Make whatever
yeah.
you want. And mm-hmm. I think there was actually even like a pamphlet or something that said, here, you can make a this.
Right.
This is how
you can, or
make, you can
make
it
that.
It was up to you
mm-hmm.
to be able to make it. So it might be even a generational thing. If I'm wondering, are there any kids out there who are actually really into just
Master builders
mm-hmm.
yeah.
or something, or do they want to follow the steps and create the final starship?
Right. Well, I appreciated that the message of the movie wasn't, though, like, throw out the instructions. It was mm-hmm. like, instructions have their place, and instructions can be really great, and you can do really fantastic things that you might not be able to do otherwise with the instructions, but you also need to have that creative impulse and, you know, try to see what you can think outside the lines. Like, they can look at a building and say, oh, you know what, I can take this building and turn it into a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And that has its use as well. So I really love that.
And I totally appreciated that message, and I thought, oh, so brilliant. This is the master product placement, right? Like, they're like, oh, they worked into the plot line the fact that Legos are, you could disassemble them and reassemble
yep.
them, and you could be a master builder and stuff. I'm like, it's brilliant. They actually worked it into the plot line.
Although I will say, as a company, it works better for you if the child builds one thing and then needs another kit
yep.
because
right,
they
true.
Already built the one thing. So telling kids that, you know what, you can actually create your own and use what you already have, I don't think it's as terrible
and not,
of a corporate
and not
message.
Craggle them together.
Yeah,
you know?
Not craggle them all.
Right,
so
but
brilliant,
it was
right?
very
like,
clever. It
the
was
way,
extremely
the whole,
clever.
It's a spoil. I don't want to spoil it, but the entire time I'm like, they're going to do something with that red brick stuck to the back of him.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to do something with
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it possibly
yeah.
be. And at the end,
I know.
Like,
I did not predict
brilliant.
That. I should have seen that one coming.
I knew it was coming to something, but yeah, I have
mm-hmm.
no idea. What.
So, would you say the children, quote unquote, children movie now has evolved? I feel like the children movie of our, like when we used to watch Disney's Bambi as a kid,
yeah.
as opposed to Legoland, like It just seems so sophisticated now. Even like The Little Mermaid, I felt was way less appealing to adults than the children's movies of now.
Well, I need to go back and watch it because maybe there were a ton of jokes that went over my head.
Maybe.
You know, I haven't watched all those.
But I feel like the commentary on how, you know, in the very beginning where he's doing jumping jacks, he's like, wait, did he say he was going to, like, kill all of us? Oh, well, I'm distracted by this TV show. Oh, well, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's such a commentary on our life, our society today, right? That is something that is so sophisticated that you would not have seen in the 1980s in a kid's film, I feel like.
I would agree. I think since studios are making less films and they need each audience to be much bigger for each film, Hollywood's not nearly as specialized as it used to be. They need to make sure that even the movies that are for kids are still going to bring in, you know, three of you have no children and all enjoy the movie, so.
Well, I feel like it's sort of gone in the opposite direction. The kids' movies are more sophisticated than the actual grown-up movies.
This had a far more sophisticated commentary on society.
Yes, there are a lot of huge, big budget.
It was a very interesting point.
That aren't sent, you know, that are geared towards adults, and kids can't even go watch them because they're PG-13 or R, and they're saying less about anything real.
You're right. Who cried?
I did.
I did. I totally cried.
The Lego movie?
The message at the end where, like, you know, everybody is special, but you gotta, like, you know, accept who you are and how you're special. Because what the line was, why do you need to be special? Because the world depends on you to be special. I'm like, oh my god. I cried like a baby.
Right. I think I got misty when the girl thought that she was interested in him only because he was special. And he realized, oh, but I'm a nobody. And that self-realization, that's where it got me. I was like, oh, poor little Lego guy. No, man, dude, you're a somebody. You know, that's what it felt like. So I think that, they timed it. They did it right. The voice, Chris Pratt, did a great job with the vocals and the characterization of that. The directors did a great job as well in terms of bringing out. I mean, this is animation. These aren't real people, but bringing out a lot of the emotion. Even Liam Neeson was great as good cop, bad cop.
And when, that's what he played.
And when he got his face wiped off, and you know, the decision he had to make
to join, and
to see his parents and stuff like that. That was, you know, it was kind
of
touching.
A lot of very emotional stuff without being, like, scarring for children, I would think. Yeah.
I mean, it was very original, and I really liked the message that, you know, the masses and everybody, you know, who wasn't a master builder was actually also a master builder. Mm. You know, everybody's creative, and you just have to find your own creativity and, you know, pursue that. And that's sort of a modern viewpoint, I feel like.
Okay, what was your favorite line? I have one. Or favorite part. I'll say it. It was funny where she was like, wait, are you not special? She's like, she asked him, like, you know, what's your favorite show? You know, where's my pants? Like, what's your favorite restaurant? Oh, any chain restaurant. Mm-hmm. I laughed so hard.
Yeah.
It was like, you're not special at all. Any favorite part?
I like the music. I like the song. Everything is
awesome.
I love that song. Everything is awesome.
It kind of stuck. I was cooking today singing it.
Sticks in the Rain. I loved that song. And then Batman's dark and broody song. It is dark.
Oh, yeah, that was brilliant. It's about me as an orphan. I have no parents.
It's dark. The songs were brilliant.
But I have money that makes it better.
Yes. I would have to say it was the moment where they all take Xeroxes of their butt. Which is just awesome because it's just like two holes.
It's like a Lego butt.
Again, adult humor.
Yeah. Exactly.
I loved when Batman is, you know, saying, babe, no, I should be able to go and party with five complete strangers anytime I want to. The character of Batman cracked me.
Well, there's like some homoeroticism in there, too, right? I'm like, this is a child's movie.
Right. Yeah, I know.
They're like, the hello hot stuff, and the woman thinks it's her. No, they were talking about Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, yeah, I'll go with you guys. You know, and right. There's really, like, in the place for him. You know.
Oh, man.
The Lego movie, everyone. Mm-hmm. Please go see it.
All right, so we have been enjoying a delicious dinner. We started with a kale salad that I made, which is the signature salad of True Food Kitchen, a restaurant here in Santa Monica, and I believe they have locations in several other states as well. It is a kale salad with lemon, olive oil, garlic, Parmesan cheese, and breadcrumbs. And you guys described it, I think, somewhat accurately as almost a kale Caesar salad.
Mm-hmm. Delightful.
Uh-huh. It was tangy. I love kale. Apparently, I'm the only person at the table who loves kale. I love kale.
But this made kale palatable for me, so.
That's the thing. I don't
like
kale.
Good job, Juliana.
Thank you. I don't like kale, but it really, those crunchy little leaves grab onto all the oil and lemon and cheese, and so you put enough of that on anything, and it's delicious.
I guess that's true. And then for the main, I actually did a World of Warcraft recipe. I know it sounds super geeky. My cousin gave it to me, and it's called Westfall Stew. Apparently, Westfall is a town in this World of Warcraft. Does anybody play this? Does anybody know anything about it? I know about it,
yeah. But it's an online gaming.
It's a chili. It's very cute. They have ingredients such as, I have the recipe right here in front of me, Murloc eyes, and if I can't find Murloc eyes at the grocery store, they said grape tomatoes would do. There's stringy vulture meat. I needed to put a half a pound of stringy vulture meat, which is actually chicken meat if I couldn't find that in the grocery store. And then a quarter pound of gore tusk snouts, which is actually sausages. And since we are doing vegetarian, I did put, you know, tofurkey sausages and seitan chicken for the stew. And then we also have the requisite cornbread to go with the chili. And I figured since it's a little bit colder now in LA, like cold as in the 60s, we should have
cold
some chili.
LA.
So much
it's a relative
chili.
Term. Yeah. Yeah.
It was delicious, by the way.
It was delicious. Yes. I don't know much about World of Warcraft, but if it's anything as delicious as this stew, I might try it.
I'll say I love the combination of the vegetables. I thought it was very hearty. For me, tofu sausage and seitan chicken, I like vegetarian when it's not trying to be meat, personally. But I did think the flavor of all the vegetables working together was very nice, and the cornbread was delicious, super sweet, which is just how I like it.
Great. Okay.
So our next topic is a proposal which is being talked about around California called the Six Californias Initiative. And this is from Silicon Valley venture capitalist Tim Draper. And he proposes that California is too large to be properly governed. And he would like to split it into six different states. There would be Jefferson, Silicon Valley, Southern California, Northern California, Western California, and Central California. So split it into six states so that the people in each of these states can be more fully represented by their government as opposed to one single Sacramento, California government trying to manage a very diverse state. So we read several articles and interviews with him speaking about you know, the pluses and the minuses of doing this. So let me ask you, Claire,
mm-hmm.
Are you ready to be a member of one of these six new states?
No.
No, thank you.
No, I just think that they're trying to gerrymander districts so that they have more power in the Senate, which, I mean, it's never going to happen, I don't think. You know, in all of the articles that we read, most of the people sort of in legislation are like, no, that's sort of a ridiculous idea. And I think it is a ridiculous idea, and I think they're...
Although in the Senate, I think it would actually help Democrats because there would be three solidly blue and three swing, so you'd get six Democratic senators.
But we already have the Senate.
We have two Democratic senators.
Yes, but the Democrats already have the Senate.
Currently.
Right, but if you switch that up and you have more places that, you know, could go either way, and you have more senators to elect.
But if it's, they're from California, they're most likely going to be Democrat.
Except in Orange
County.
There'll
be 12 new or 10 new Senate seats.
Yes.
And chances are six to eight of them would be solidly Democratic.
Yeah, at least six will be solidly Democratic as opposed to just the two. Yeah, and then,
I would say actually solidly eight, if I was counting, would be Democratic. So right. It would totally throw off the Senate.
In terms of the Senate, I think it would help Democrats, but in terms of the Electoral College, it would help Republicans because instead of saying, all right, 55 votes automatically for California blue, it gets divided up.
That's true.
And not much change in the House of Representatives because,
right.
So,
population.
I think change in the Senate would be huge. It would definitely make it a blue Senate. For many years.
Well, here's the fascinating thing is like if this were to happen and California were to suddenly, or the West Coast were to suddenly have five additional states, and then one that's considered the sixth or whatever, so we have 55 states in the Union, thus adding the 10 new senators into the Union, what's going to prevent any other state from splitting up, like Texas
Nothing.
From splitting up.
And that's what he was saying.
He proposes that. Yeah.
Right. New York will split up into three, Texas will split up.
Which then we go, the question about how many Democrats and Republicans or whoever we're going to have in the Senate is kind of, you have to gauge that too and go, well, you know, a red state might split into.
Like Texas.
Like 10
California
states,
splits,
and then,
Texas
and
will split.
And then
right.
the, each of those.
And that's fine. Then it goes back to normal.
Then it goes back to normal. Then
right.
It
if we're talking only about Senate seats, but we're also talking about infrastructure in California as well.
That is the question.
Right. Like, do you think it will do any good to split up the states?
Well, here's the thing.
And I just want to put a note to our listeners because I had a question about this. Jefferson, the county of or the state of Jefferson, compromises the most northern part of California. Just so you know,
yes.
All the other ones, the names actually you can get an idea.
It also mentioned in a lot of those articles that the Silicon Valley, Silicon State, the state of Silicon Valley, would become like the nation's most
richest per capita.
Yes. Per capita.
Yeah.
And another, maybe it was the
Jefferson
will become the world.
No, Central California.
Central California would become the poorest in the nation, below Mississippi. Now, how is that beneficial?
Right, that seems not beneficial at all.
What Tim Draper would say is, well, you take somewhere like Central California where they have all of these rules and regulations about land use that, you know, may be perfectly fine if you're in Los Angeles, but if you're a farmer in the Central California, you want to change those rules. And he says he has, you know, a lot of support. He's very vague in his statements, but that they would be able to, as a state, decide on laws that would work for them, that would hopefully enable them to not, you know, to attract business and no longer be the poorest state, is the theory.
There was one point that was brought up in one of the articles. It mentioned just the red tape and the logistics of people. For example, you live in Santa Ana, you work in the city of Los Angeles. You now have to pay another state interstate tax and another state's income tax because you're making money in a different state, technically, according
right.
to this his pie slices of the states. And then also the idea of the UC system and somebody paying from San Francisco paying for their son or daughter to go to UCLA and having to pay out-of-state tuition.
And the larger issue of, I think it's Jefferson, is left without a UC campus, so they can no longer attend.
Have an in-state.
In-state,
UC
yeah.
But
campus.
That would be easy enough to fix. Just build another
yeah.
one.
That's
right?
logistics.
Yeah.
That's logistics, or just make an agreement
but I think
between the UC regions.
What he's trying to solve is, he lists, you know, huge problems in the California government is our failure at the education system. It's so large and unruly. And our failure in the prison population, our failure to, you know, to manage our prison populations and lower the recidivism rates of our prisons. And if we split it up into six states, maybe, the governments would be closer to the ground and they would be able to serve the people better. I think that's a legitimate
I don't understand how splitting it up fixes it in any
right.
way.
Yes.
Don't,
you still
We're
have
already.
The same economies going on in each of those regions. So I
think
don't
maybe
I,
he was thinking that the government will be more localized and would have less to deal with, as opposed to an entire state that has so many different needs.
Right, but there is local government. There's local government at a county level. There's local government at a city level, at a town level.
But they all do have to report to a state. They all
right, and then
the state
and then all of our states have to report to the federal government
right.
as well. So, you know, to create more states like Rhode Island, I mean, I don't know necessarily how you gain anything from that. You still have local economies. You still have it would still need the same sort of federal help that that California would need right now. You know, basically you're just, if you isolate Silicon Valley and say that you will have the richest state in the union, and you know, technology is such that it is such a booming industry that those corporations that are paying taxes right now, they would not go to the poor part of Central California.
There you go. It would stay in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, therefore...
So, do you think he has an ulterior motive
yes.
for wanting to do this? What do you think it is?
Well, I think all of the sort of libertarian and Tea Party and conservative ideology right now is so skewed and makes no sense to me because it's so sort of Ayn Randian.
But this isn't all of Silicon Valley backing this proposal. This is Tim Draper...
And his mysterious we.
His very mysterious we.
Specialists and whoever he claims, quote, I'll let them speak for themselves.
Has there ever been a state, did Virginia and West Virginia, did they split at some time?
Yeah, they split, I believe it was during the Civil War, when one wanted to go with the Confederacy and one wanted to go with the Union. So it's happened, and when I first heard this proposal, I thought, oh, that's interesting. Like, I think... It is an interesting thing to consider, but then when I read everything of what his arguments are versus what everyone else is saying, where they're essentially like, but what about, you know, the water infrastructure, and what about the fact that all these urban areas don't have prisons, and, you know, the prisons are in the more rural areas, and it creates good jobs and an economy in the rural areas, and it, you know, you need to get them out of the urban areas. Just there's so many things that this doesn't solve at all, and
doesn't even address.
Doesn't address, and when he's questioned about it, he's like, "Well, you need to do the research and figure out how that's going to work." Like, he puts it on the journalist.
Yeah. No, maybe you should do it before you propose something this drastic.
Yeah, like when the journalist is saying, you know, you're saying that we spend the most on education and get the least out of it. How does dividing into six states work? He's like, "Well, you're saying we should keep just doing what we're doing? That's a terrible idea." And it's like, but defend your viewpoint.
Yes, like, yes.
He's saying that it's going to create competition among the states where they're going to be trying to win people over to their counties. And I just feel like if that was the case, then already we'd be competing with Washington and Nevada. And it's not a big thing where states, you know, are like working harder in order to be better than the other states around them.
Right.
Like,
yeah, and, you know, as a whole, I think California has always drawn so many different people with so many different interests.
And talents
to different regions, and we will continue to do that. This is why it was so strange, and also shifting it a little bit, not just from the political difficulties that might arise, but just from the social and kind of cultural aspect of it. I'm never going to call myself a West Californian.
Oh, I was curious about that I don't care. Where he was like, people take pride in being Californian.
Oh, I take pride in being completely Californian.
Really?
And I take pride also, and for me, as a very visual person.
Are you born and raised here?
I'm born and raised here.
There you go, that's why.
I'm being part of California. Not just a Southern California versus Northern California. When I meet somebody who's born and raised in Yosemite or in San Francisco, I'm like, we're Californians, kind of thing. California to me... feels like it should be a complete whole state. And then also just visually, I looked at his cut-up of what he was going to do to our beautiful leg-shaped California.
It was sexy.
Yeah, and I went, you know, that state is clunky.
It's interesting because, I mean, New England is sort of, you know, which is where I'm from, it is divided up into a bunch of different states, and yet we still sort of identify as New Englanders. And, you know, you think about it, and it's like, well, Rhode Island could stand to be annexed by Connecticut, really. You know, it's a teeny tiny state.
That's an interesting thought, conglomerating, actually.
Yeah, start dividing up and conglomerating.
Right, but I think that, you know, from the inception of, you know, the white man's version of this country, there is some kind of identity that goes with all of the states that are in existence right now. And that it would take a lot to change that.
It would take so much. What is it? It takes, he has to propose it, and it's already gone through, right? They've already signed the proposal.
No,
and he needs like
signatures.
How many signatures?
Oh, I think like 800,000
signatures. And then the state of California, it has to go onto the ballot in 2014 or 2016. The people of California, the 30 million people in California, have to approve it.
And that makes me worry.
Wait,
really? I feel like Californians would never do that. They would
really?
Just be like,
I feel like. Because I feel like this is the sort of thing where when I first heard about it, I was like, oh, it sounds like kind of an interesting idea. That could be good to be more specialized and localized. And then when I actually looked and read a few articles on it, I was like, this is a terrible idea. And I worry that the average California voter just looks at the little synopsis and would say, yeah, I like the idea of having my own little local.
But even if. For some reason, all Californians ratify this. Then it's got to go to
Washington, the federal government, where it's
and
never going
to
pass.
The Senate has to pass.
Never
one of the articles that says, you know what the vote's going to be? It's going to be 98 against and 2-4
right.
The Senate right now. So I'm like, yeah.
I can't.
It won't happen.
It won't happen.
No,
I can't imagine any
or
other
if it happens, it'll be like 200 years from now.
And here, and see exactly in the dystopian future.
Right.
Right. After
when
the earthquake, when we fall off,
and then we'll be known as District 14.
District 14, exactly. It's just such, because that's what it would be. That's what,
right.
Let's bring it, you know, let's bring the surfers from Western California to fight the farm kids.
And Silicon Valley's the capital.
And Silicon Valley will.
And the pot growers from Jefferson.
Jefferson. To bring those kids in to Silicon Valley will telecast it to the rest of the world. You know, that's what it feels like.
Great.
Excellent.
So we are enjoying a dessert, a strawberry shortcake made by Juliana. Would you like to tell us about it?
Sure. This is the Williams-Sonoma recipe for strawberry shortcake. I liked it because it had both buttermilk and lemon zest in the shortcake. Just a simple shortcake. Went to the farmer's market. The strawberries were fabulous, so that's why I decided to make this.
Lemon zest. That's what it was.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. Yeah.
What'd you guys think?
No, very good.
Delicious.
I've made some shortcakes in my life, and, you know, this I did like the flavors of this one.
I was disappointed by this shortcake,
really?
Have to say. Yeah, first off, it did not rise as expected.
Mm-hmm.
It expanded outwards. It got much larger than it was, but it didn't rise. And then, I don't know, maybe I overworked the dough, but it felt
biscuits.
Too dense and
biscuits.
Oh, that's what I liked about it.
Really?
It feels like a scone. Like a scone.
Yeah.
It was a little more
scone-like.
It was a scone texture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want a lighter texture for my shortcake.
Yeah.
I like the scone.
You know, fresh baking powder and...
Maybe my baking powder's not fresh enough.
And, not working the dough. I mean, biscuits are a fine art
I barely touched it. It's still falling apart.
So the more you work the dough, the denser it gets?
Yeah.
The gluten develops.
You learn something every day. Oh, the gluten develops.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is?
Very interesting. Okay, now on to our third topic. I'm sure all of us are on Facebook. I know you guys all are. You're all my friends. And
yay!
Noticed...
I'm your in-the-flesh friend, too.
Okay, you're not just a Facebook friend.
Yay.
And I have noticed recently all these posts, more and more, lists of this, quizzes of that, and they all come from this website called BuzzFeed.com. And so we did some research into BuzzFeed, and they call themselves a social content-driven publishing technology. They say that they are revolutionizing the way viral content is distributed on the internet these days. And we just wanted to find out, do you think this is the end of civilization? All these stories on there, I mean, I went on the website. What are some of the topics? 21 smells 90s girls will never forget. 20 puppies
lip smacker. I hope lip smacker was on there.
20 puppies cuddling with their stuffed animals. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, this is the content we are fed now on Facebook. So what do you guys...
I will say, when I clicked on it yesterday to really take a look around for this podcast, the first thing that came up was shooting at Fort Hood.
Yes.
And I thought, that is on BuzzFeed?
This is the thing that's confusing about BuzzFeed, and I think that they need to figure out what they want to be, because a lot of their true stories, to me, feel almost like they are... like I'm looking at the Onion, or, you know, they feel like there should be parodies. They feel like, this isn't true, or what is the funny thing about this? Or, oh, is this shooting at Fort, is this a quit?
Because it is right next to puppies cuddling with their stuffed animals.
And when I pulled it up this afternoon, I did see all the Fort Hood stuff, but my eyes kept getting drawn to, how big are your boobs, really?
Right.
Are your boobs just out of control at this point? And I just kept getting, it was
I'll
the
just,
left
I'll tell you, mine are.
Did you take that quiz?
Mine are out of control. I did not. I didn't need to take that quiz to know that.
Shut up, boobs.
Claire's single, by the way.
Taking over my life.
So, when you guys see this stuff on Facebook, are you drawn to it? Do you think it's slowly rotting our brains?
No, for fun and entertainment, I love BuzzFeed. For fun and entertainment and things that are fluff and fun and don't matter either way to the world or my life, love it. Love BuzzFeed. But if they're going to put up a serious story about that, a serious news story, I won't, that's not going to be my first source to get the news. Does that make sense?
Right,
it's
yes.
not going to be
no,
my first source
of course
to
not.
Get the scoop
and that's,
on.
Yeah, and that they're not, that's not their game anyway. So
although,
the fact that it sort of crops up on BuzzFeed.
They're moving in that direction. They are sending reporters now out, you know, to cover stories.
Because they're trying to get this, the trend or the viral aspect of things. So, of course, current news stories that are a major earthquake would be a very viral news story.
Right,
if
right.
that's trending on Twitter, they're going to want to take that.
That's what they're doing. I feel like it's the new version of what a magazine is. Like, if you look at sort of a 17 magazine or Cosmopolitan or any of those magazines that, you know, there might be a real story in there somewhere, but you're paging through all of these, you know, quizzes like 10 ways to land that man or, you know, it's all of the same sort of general stuff that is, I feel like it's sort of addictive. Like, you're like, oh, well, I want to see about, you know, what time period I would belong in by taking this quiz, and, you know. And you're like, wait, this is a waste of my time, because at the end of the day, it tells me that I'm in a, you know, I belong in Imperial China. Awesome. I don't know. What do I gain? Nothing. But it gets you to the advertising. It gets you to, you know, be on BuzzFeed for that much longer.
Well, I think especially with their quizzes, I read an interview with the woman who creates a lot of them. And she said, I think a really good point about them is they feed into our narcissism. We are incredibly narcissistic.
Yeah.
And we now have all of these social platforms with which to share our narcissism and let everyone else know what, you know,
right, the
Shakespearean character
Shakespearean
you
character
are.
We are. And Viola. So... so we'll go and we'll tweet about it and we'll Facebook about it. Because we want everyone to know about us. And then they're going to see it and their narcissism is going to be piqued. And they're going to say, oh, well, I better find out who I am. And they'll go and take the quiz.
Right.
I went on their site and there is like a how-to. And they were giving tips on like how to get your posting viral. And they say appeal to their vanity.
Yeah.
Appeal to the vanity. Mm-hmm. And that's where the quizzes go in. They're like quizzes that appeal to your vanity go viral. And so, but in the end, again, it's like we're just like feeding
right.
our own narcissism, feeding our head full of these empty lists and
right.
quizzes.
And this is just the next, you know, this is the internet version of what those magazines are. It is fluffy. You're not, that isn't going to be your new source. You're not going to buy Vogue magazine or Cosmopolitan or any of those things and say, oh, yeah, this is where I'm going to get my news and figure out, you know, why Ivan Lopez, you know, shot up 16 or 19 people at Fort Hood. That's not where I'm going to find that out. But there might be like a little blurb about it in the magazine at some point to just...
I think the danger of BuzzFeed, though, is how it can suck you in as opposed to the magazines where at least they end. So, like, BuzzFeed just goes on and on.
And this is the next generation.
Yeah, where, and it's done in such a way, too. The lists, for some reason, people do love lists.
People love lists.
Yeah, you love knowing, like, all right, well, let me see 10 reasons that, you know... Chris Hemsworth is the world's, you know, most attractive specimen of manhood. Like, why? I can take the time to see 10. Like, I can do that.
But does that add to your
life?
Adds was that
nothing?
Was that 10 minutes to read that one?
No, and yeah, and that's not what it's designed to do. It's designed to suck you in. And now I just saw, you know, promo for Veep, and it was like, did the character from Veep say this, or did a real politician say this? And it's a foolish little thing, but it's a total, you know, it's all about the advertising. Yeah. It's all about promoting whatever they're selling.
And I saw one that said 10 reasons why Selena Gomez, the Veep character, would make an awesome president. So the advertisers can fit right in and have it be exactly like everything
it's
else.
Product it's placement, and it's also, you know, designed to draw people
in. We're all shills. We're just, you know, these lemmings that are just falling, like, we're like sucked to the pretty light, and we're just being fed advertising.
Yes.
And
right.
And our lives, I mean, honestly,
I
have to admit, when my friends
these...
post it on Facebook, I click on it, and then I get sucked, and then half an hour later, I haven't done anything, and I'm, like, taking quizzes, and it's so addictive. And I would say majority of the posts of my friends on my newsfeed is, like, sharing of BuzzFeed stories.
And the funny thing is, in terms of sharing it, because I've shared stuff on Facebook from BuzzFeed.
I think we all have.
Yeah. I haven't done that.
Really?
The idea of sharing it is...
I know that there are certain friends of mine who would want to go, oh, you got that character, that persona. Who would I be? You know, yeah, I got William Shakespeare. You got Pablo Picasso. You know, there's something just fun and fluffy about it. It's fun and fluffy.
Yeah,
and feeding into our narcissism of, oh, I'm Shakespeare. I'm Picasso.
Right,
you
right.
know?
Well, I feel like that is what the me generation is. The me generation, you know, comes from this now sort of personalized internet experience. You know, you go on and you announce to all 700 of your friends what you're doing that day, what you had for dinner, what you had for lunch. But also, you are getting targeted very specifically by the corporation's advertising department based on what you post or based on what you put in your emails. Like, Google's personalized ads pop up. If you have keyword opera, it'll show you where you can go to the opera. It'll show you, you know, so the... You know, everything is getting very specific to me.
Yes.
You know, it's designed for me. Everything is designed for me.
And that's another huge chunk of BuzzFeed, too, is the hyper-localized, where it's like 22 things only people from southern New Hampshire will understand.
Right.
And so people are like, oh, yes, this is
super
me.
Super hyper. Yes,
yeah,
this is
like,
me. This is me.
This is who I really am.
And it's also so, I mean, yeah, it's... so subjective, and it's so, like, absurd.
It's a person.
No, you know it's some housewife in Fresno writing these quizzes. There's
maybe
no psychological basis to them.
No, and a lot of them that have come out now, they're, it's like, well, Ira Glass took the Which NPR Host Are You? And he did not get Ira Glass. And Shirley Manson took Which 90s Rocker Girl Are You? And she did not get Shirley Manson. Like, you know, it's quite arbitrary.
Yes, it's extremely arbitrary.
I mean, I think these quizzes are made more, talking about narcissism, the people who create the quizzes, they are putting them up there to see how viral their quizzes get.
Which
so the more sensationalist their quizzes, the more topical their quizzes, Like, because BuzzFeed gives you badges. Like, they give you the LOL badge if yours is funny. They give you the cute badge if your post is cute. And I think there's people out there who really want to get these badges, really want to see their stuff go viral, because it's narcissism.
Yeah, you want your story or you want your quiz to go viral. I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, pride in narcissism.
I want this podcast to go viral.
Yeah. We need an LOL badge.
Make that happen, listeners. Make that happen.
There is just something fascinating about doing those quizzes and figuring out the combinations, and it's a simple math and a flow to chart and, you know, a yes-no answer and that kind of stuff.
They've even cut down on the text. Like, they now, you click on a big square with a thing and there's pictures everywhere, as opposed to old-fashioned quizzes where it was just like A, B, C and it was written out. Now it's in this much prettier format so you don't get bogged down in all the text. Like, it's so appealing to the basest, lowest.
This is like reality TV.
Yes.
Or like, you know, comedians who all they do is cuss to get a laugh. It's appealing to the lowest common denominator, and it's the dumbing down of Western civilization. It really is. We're not interested in Fort Hood. We want to know what our boobs are like. Really, that's what you will choose if you go to that website. It's designed that way, right?
Right.
Because nobody wants to see shootings. They see a woman with big boobs. I'm going to click on that.
And that's the problem, too, is that actual news sources, such as CNN, are seeing, oh, if you put a celebrity in there, people are going to read it and click on it. Like, now that it's so trackable, I hate to say it, but they are, you know, going towards whatever the lowest common denominator is because they're tracking it and that's what's getting watched.
Here's something interesting that's very timely as well. I'm wondering, because you mentioned, like, CNN, and I noticed that, like, on CNN and Time and legitimate, quote-unquote, news sources, they always have top 10 lists, top 100 lists. Top 100 richest for.
I'm sure it comes from this culture.
But does it come from also David Letterman's top 10 lists and that phenomenon with the top 10 reasons why?
Right. And I feel like lists have been around for a while. And I feel like that, you know, it comes from sort of that magazine culture. Like, we could look back and see what, you know, a Cosmo would be, you know, 30 years ago. And they would probably still have, you know, because you're wondering, you, countdowns are interesting. What's the number one going to be?
I do think that with BuzzFeed and the popularity that it's experiencing, legitimate news sources are looking to that and are infusing more of that into their reporting than they previously had.
Oh, totally. Again, my point, dumbing down our news sources and our the material that we're taking in as Americans.
Because it is all business.
We did ask our guests to take a BuzzFeed quiz in the spirit of fun, and what we chose, what period of time
do you really belong in?
Did you really belong in?
Elizabethan England. Thank you, ladies
and gentlemen. Edwardian England.
Oh, well, there you go. Downton Abbey.
Yes. I got
the picture.
I got Imperial China.
You and I are both hanging out. I'm the whitest girl ever, and I got Imperial China. I don't know.
I would not have pictured you in Imperial China, or you, Liz, for that matter, despite the fact that you're Chinese.
It's true.
You belong in Elizabethan
England.
Yes, I think I belong in Edwardian England.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is some science.
50-50 shot.
I remember taking what state you belong in, and they gave me Georgia.
Oh.
Whoa.
It did not give me West Los Angeles or West California.
I took the single one, and then it was like, yeah, you're single. And I'm like,
I don't know.
Are you
single?
Like, no, it was, like, how single are you?
How single are you?
And you are definitely
What were the choices?
Single?
Very, not very? Yeah.
I have no idea. You don't know. You don't know what the end result is until you take it. And then it's like, you're pretty single.
I'm
like,
single?
See, that's humor.
That was 20 years, 20 minutes of your life you can't get back.
Oh, it didn't take me 20 minutes to take that test.
5 minutes of your life you can't back.
I only did it for research purposes for this, you know.
I researched if Ryan Gosling's my soulmate, as long as I was on the site. And it turns out, he is not.
Oh, really?
No.
Damn, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, my husband will be happy here.
Well, the golden age movie star I am is Carol Lombard.
Oh, that's good.
I could see that. I could be
Carol Lombard too, I think.
Yeah, you could be Carol Lombard.
Maybe you're the same person in BuzzFeed quizzes.
Yeah, Imperial China and Carol Lombard. Yeah.
Do you want to go to Georgia?
And pretty single.
Actually, not sort of single. So ridiculous.
I know. I mean, and the questions were just like, you know, did you eat, have you had Ben and Jerry's ice cream? And I was like, yes. Have you had an entire thing of Ben and Jerry's ice cream in the last, you know, 48 hours? I was like, no.
I guess that would make you super single.
That would make you really, really single.
All right. So now is the time in our podcast where we do our endorsements. Claire, would you like to start off with your endorsement?
Well, I have to plug my children's book, which is called Nathaniel T. Culpepper is Missing a Sock.
Aww.
And I wrote it, and I had my friend Travis Stanberry illustrate it. And it's just a fun little story about Nathaniel T. Culpepper, who loses a sock, as we all do, and his mother thinks that if he just cleans up his room, he will find it, but he is convinced that an elf has stolen it. And he's going to capture the elf. So, you know, sort of a magical... you can get it on Amazon.com. Just either type Claire Garrity Mott in, and that book will come up because it's my first book. Or Nathaniel T. Culpepper is Missing a Sock.
And we can link to it on the web.
Yes,
Facebook.
And we'll put a link to it, obviously. Cool. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, and it's good for all age groups. I mean, even grown-ups could probably benefit from...
Much like Lego movie.
You know.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thanks, Claire. Mm-hmm. Newton, your endorsement?
I have several, but I had to narrow them down. But again, it's another literary piece of work. Mm-hmm. It's not my own. I recommend, and you can find this online, a short story about, I think it's about 12,000 words long. You can find it, read it completely online, called The Machine Stops by E.M. Forster, written in 1909. It's amazing. If you use the internet, read this story. Talks about, and this is written in, you know, turn of the 20th century, where he talks about people communicating via digital networks and people communicating over interface and living in a world, in a society where the machine, where the internet, where any kind of machinery, man-made built computers, basically have defined and controlled the meaning of existence, of human existence. So I would recommend Googling it. I'm reading it online. It's great. It's a great short story.
Now the machine is controlling our human existence.
Use that machine and read about the machine.
There you go. Yes. Use the machine to read about the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Julie.
My endorsement is inspired by the Lego movie. I highly recommend that you all go out and see Phil Lord and Chris Miller's other film, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Again, you might think this is a kid's movie. I'm an adult. Why am I going to watch it? It is the same exact hilarious, absolutely appeals to our generation. I heard them speak about it, and they were talking about how the glory of animation is that you spend so much time with each frame that they have time to put in all these extra things mm-hmm. that you would never have in a live shoot because they spend so much time with it. So it's just, it is rich and heavy with delight. So everyone go check out their first movie, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
So my endorsement, I have struggled my entire adult life with back pain. And I thought it was because in college I had lifted weights too hard and I hurt myself. Mm-hmm. And so I have literally spent thousands of dollars and bought every type of like bolster and heating pad and cooling pad and rolling balls, and I've gone to chiropractic, everything. And recently what it was my freaking purse. I need to stop carrying large purses on my right shoulder that throws off my left shoulder out. Whoa. And so I am endorsing no more big bags.
But what does one do if one has a diaper
bag? You're going to have back problems. Oh. But it'll only be for a couple years.
I guess so.
But I was like, oh my God, I've had this lifelong problem. And it's because I have lifelong carried a big old bag on my right shoulder and throughout my left.
What made you put it down?
I just realized it one day. I put down my purse and I just used a crossover purse, and it's my backpack is almost gone. And I've been going to, like, you know, a therapist for it too. But It's been a lifesaver. It used to be I could barely get out of bed in the morning.
Wow.
So that's my endorsement.
So we should all get backpacks.
Right.
Or crossover. Rolling, yes. Rolling suitcases.
Rolling suitcases.
Rolling suitcase diaper bag.
All right.
Wow. That's cool.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. It's been such a pleasure.
Yes. There are going to be links to our guests, the topics, the endorsements, and everything on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/culturaldish.
And thank you for dinner.
It was
fantastic. Yes.
Thank you guys so much.
And dessert. It was excellent.
Yay. Good night.
Good night.